Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. We're now learning, by the way, the time of President Obama's deficit reduction speech tomorrow, in which he's expected to lay out a major 10-year plan that would affect everything from Social Security to Medicare to Medicaid to tax rates if his plan prevails over the Paul Ryan plan or any other one that may come out. It is 1:35 tomorrow afternoon. So we invite you to join me and some other folks on our politics website at that time to listen to it and for a live online simultaneous chat so we can all get together and listen to this very major address by President Obama on our politics website. It's a freecountry.org, 1:30 tomorrow afternoon. Make a note on your calendar. Now, as Egypt makes its transition to democracy, a former State Department advisor says the U.S. needs to understand the divisions within the Muslim Brotherhood. There is much fear of the Brotherhood in the U.S., of course, given the history of some Islamist political movements elsewhere. But David Phillips, writing in the Egypt Daily News, says there now seems to be a generational split, with the younger members of the Brotherhood much more progressive, and that the U.S. should engage with them, not isolate them. David Phillips is director of the Program on Peace Building and Rights at Columbia University's Institute for the Study of Human Rights. He is author of the 2008 book, Bullets to Ballots, Violent Muslim Movements in Transition. Hi, David. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks, Brian. Good to speak with you.
Describe the generational split that you see in Egypt's Muslim Brotherhood and what you mean by the younger generation being more progressive than the founders of the movement who you describe as older ideologues.
And progressive is a relative term. The Muslim Brotherhood is inherently a conservative organization. The Guidance Council, which includes, you know, its senior leaders, subscribe closely to al-Banna's radical theology.
That was the founder of the movement, Hassan al-Banna?
The founder of the movement and its ideological godfather. There was in the 1970s and 80s a youth movement. Those youth leaders are now called the middle generation. Coming out of Tahrir Square, there is a younger generation of brothers that are much more open-minded and flexible and want to play a role in politics. Those are the members of the Muslim Brotherhood that the U.S. should be engaging. Whether we like it or not, the Brotherhood's going to play a role, and we want to try to get ahead of events.
And there are groups that you call neo-fundamentalists who have engaged in religious violence in Egypt. Can you tell us who they are and some of that history?
There are a number of them. They're mostly based up in the north and on the Gaza border. They've been responsible for a whole series of attacks and militant activities over decades. They've targeted Christians and cops, video clubs, stores that sell alcohol. They were responsible for the attack on tourists at Luxor in 1997. These are neo-fundamentalist groups closely aligned ideologically with al-Qaeda. You know, they represent the real radical wing in Egypt. They make the Muslim Brotherhood look much more moderate.
So is there a power struggle within the Brotherhood today along more progressive versus more traditionally ideological lines, or a struggle within the Islamist movements of Egypt between the progressives and the neo-fundamentalists? How would you describe any power struggle?
I would say there's a debate rather than a power struggle. What happened in Tahrir Square was a process that unleashed all of these disparate points of view. And disparate views within the Brotherhood are also prevailing. The younger generation is standing up. Their voices are being counted. Now, they're demanding reform, and they want to play a political role. They want the Muslim Brotherhood to adapt to modernity. They recognize that Egypt has a leading role to play in the whole Arab Spring, and they don't want to be left out of the process. They're a real force.
And listeners, if you want to get involved in this conversation, you can call us up with your questions for David Phillips, author of Bullets to Ballots, Violent Muslim Movements in Transition. and his piece in the Egypt Daily News about the younger, more progressive generation in the Muslim Brotherhood and how he wants the U.S. to engage with them. 212-433-WNYC. Any Egyptians listening with an opinion or anyone else? 212-433-WNYC. Your thoughts and your questions. 212-433-9692. Or you can post to our webpage at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show or tweet us at Brian Lehrer. David, even with the young progressives, you warn U.S. officials that it would be naive to conclude that the Brotherhood is accommodating toward Western principles. In what important ways are they not?
No matter what generation, the Brotherhood espouses Sharia law for Egypt. And they'll play a very important role in the process of drafting Egypt's future constitution. We're looking at parliamentary elections in September. Emerging from that legislative body will be a drafting committee. It will prepare a new constitution defining the respective roles of different branches of government, and then Egypt will have presidential elections. The Brotherhood is clearly going to want to insinuate Sharia values and laws into Egypt's law of the land. So we're looking at Egypt, which is going to be increasingly Islamist, and despite this progressive group within the Brotherhood, an Egypt which is more and more hostile to U.S. interests and more likely to abrogate its treaty of peace with Israel.
And what would Islamists look like in a domestic sense? Last hour we talked about France's new law banning women from wearing the niqab. Do you think that it would be required potentially in Egypt? Is that a topic of discussion?
When you look at Sharia law, there's a menu of different options. I think that when it comes to women's rights, you can clearly say that women played an important role in Tahrir Square. In a secular Egypt that was run by Mubarak, women had prominent positions. Their role in society and in government is likely to diminish as Egypt moves forward with its new constitution and adopts Islamist principles as part of its constitution.
Now, the point of your article, in addition to describing the generational divisions within the Brotherhood and some of this landscape of what they believe in that you were just laying out, is to urge U.S. engagement with the group. Is the Obama administration in kind of a decision-making process now over whether to engage?
The Brotherhood is not a foreign terrorist organization, but by custom, the U.S. government has not interacted with the Muslim Brotherhood in the past. There have been some low-level contacts or meetings at different conferences, but the U.S. has steadfastly adopted a policy, a no-go zone when it comes to interacting with the Brotherhood. That's largely been as a result of Israel's opposition to the Brotherhood and the view that the Brotherhood is the godfather to groups like Hamas and Hezbollah that are hostile to Israel's interests.
So what would engagement with the Brotherhood, American engagement, look like, and toward what end?
I think engagement can take many forms. It's not just the United States. There are other countries like Turkey or Malaysia or Indonesia where you have an Islamist identity and a functioning secular democracy. These are the kinds of models that I think can be held forth for Egypt that are applicable. As part of engaging the Brotherhood and moving them more to the center, the U.S. has to stop stigmatizing them. David Cameron was the first world leader to visit Egypt after the Tahrir Square demonstration.
The Prime Minister of the U.K.
And he made a point of excluding the Brotherhood from his schedule. What that did is it got the Guardian Council and the conservatives up in arms. Within the Brotherhood, there's going to be a debate about the future of the organization and the future of the country, and we don't want to push the Brotherhood towards the neo-fundamentalists by isolating them.
Let's take some phone calls. And again, my guest is David Phillips, former advisor to the State Department. director of the Program on Peacebuilding and Rights at Columbia University's Institute for the Study of Human Rights and author of the 2008 book, Bullets to Ballots, Violent Muslim Movements in Transition. And he wrote a piece in the Egypt Daily News describing the younger, more progressive generation of the Muslim Brotherhood and urging U.S. engagement with them. And Ahmed in Queens, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Yes, hello, Brian. A great show. I have a question for Mr. Phillips. Is the Brotherhood in Egypt qualified enough to bring about social and political change and to lead that? And why the West and America are very sensitive to deal with Islamists? And I'm afraid of this is a good opportunity for democracy in Egypt and Middle East to open up to know the agenda of those Islamist movement is very open and open dialogue and those and so on. And this is my specific question: is Brotherhood put on the category of qualification to lead political and social change or not, or premature yet to do so?
Are they qualified as leaders? Is that what you're asking?
Yes.
The short answer to your question, Ahmed, it's too soon to tell. They've never been in a position of responsibility, so we don't know how the Brotherhood would act once they have authority through governance. The reality is that they exist, and they're going to play a role in Egypt's future. We don't know the extent of that role because we can't look in a crystal ball and determine the outcome of elections. But we do know from the recent referendum that the Brotherhood is extensively organized. They've got 7,000 chapters around the country. When it comes to turning out the vote, they have a system in place. The U.S. would much rather deal with the young secularists that led the demonstrations in Tahrir Square, but the Brotherhood isn't going away. That's why we need to start engaging with the Brotherhood, nurturing their political values, and working with allies like Turkey and Malaysia and Indonesia to try to impress upon the Brotherhood the responsibility that comes with governance in an Islamic country.
Skeptics will argue, and Ahmed, thank you so much for your call. Skeptics will argue, David, that Islamist groups will do what they do regardless of what the U.S. does, that their agenda is fixed, and we delude ourselves into believing that we can sing Kumbaya with people with fixed agendas and influence them. You don't buy that?
No, I do buy that, and count me in that skeptics category. But that doesn't mean that we don't engage. We just have to do so carefully and constructively. If we try to instruct the Muslim Brotherhood on their future role, we could even do harm to the goals that we're trying to achieve. What's needed now is skillful diplomacy and outreach to factions within the Brotherhood so we can start developing relationships. We'll turn to those relationships in the future.
Murray in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Murray.
Hi, good morning. Are you aware, I was just thinking also that Hitler had been properly elected. Are you also aware of what's going on at the Muslim Brotherhood, what's been happening the past several years at schooling level, where they have books that are patently anti-Semitic? I don't think there's any question of their agenda, and I find it amazing that you would come out and promote that agenda.
There's a difference between promoting that agenda and promoting a dialogue with them. I am aware of their deep hostility towards Israel. The fact that they are held forth as the...
I don't think it's Israel. I think it's anti-Semitism. I think you ought to make sure, you know, specify that and not just say Israel. It is not Israel. It is anti-Semitic.
Let's broaden it even further. They're anti-Zionist, they're anti-Semitic, and they've shown that they're anti-Western. But that doesn't mean that we don't talk to them. We live in a world where engagement needs to be part of diplomacy. What we learned from the previous administration is that when you try to isolate your adversaries, you radicalize them even further.
So you feel Chamberlain was correct when he dealt with Hitler?
No, I don't think Chamberlain was correct. He was not skillful, nor were European leaders skillful in addressing that growing danger. We need to have skillful diplomacy right now, and that doesn't mean turning a blind eye to reality.
Murray, thank you. to follow up on that, you wrote in your article that the Brotherhood is uniquely placed to advance the goal of Arab-Israeli peace through its historic and spiritual ties with Hamas. But isn't Hamas a violent rejectionist movement? If that's the Muslim Brotherhood's link to Israel-Palestine, why not think Brotherhood involvement would simply strengthen Hamas rather than strengthen the peace camps?
If the Brotherhood's involvement is dominated by the Al-Banna followers and the radicals in the movement, then the scenario that you just described is likely to be the outcome. If there's a debate within the movement and we can advance the moderate faction and get them to recognize that it's in Egypt's interests as well as the region's interests to sustain the Egypt-Israeli peace accord, then we would have achieved something. What I believe strongly is that we can't ignore realities that are occurring today in Egypt. And if we pretend that the Muslim Brotherhood is not a factor, we're going to be caught flat-footed after their elections and then be scrambling to try to find representatives of the Brotherhood with whom we can talk.
Does the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt have a position on retaining the peace treaty with Israel or not?
Members of the Muslim Brotherhood are on record making statements that are deeply hostile to Israel. And there is no reason to hope that they're going to accommodate Israel in the future. It's precisely for those reasons that we want to try to get to them and start a dialogue about regional stability and Egypt's interests. Egypt has always been at the forefront of the Middle East peace. We don't want them to become an adversary to that goal.
Abdul in New Hyde Park, you're on WNYC. Hello, Abdul.
Yes, hi. Initially, the first question was, what part of Sharia law does your guest think is offensive to any moral value? And then number two is, as the other caller were saying, I think his name is Mari, that the Muslim Brotherhood and other Muslim organizations, those who are in existence in the Middle East, they are anti-Semitic in their values. If you look at the Christian organizations in the United States, and I think you on your show, you had guests there. They're promoting the second coming of Jesus. Then all the Jews should be in Israel, and ultimately the Christians will, eradicate them, and they will have the power over them. Now, unless as an American foreign policy, if we do not change our view that everything has to revolve around Israel, we will always have this problem in the entire Muslim world and even in Europe. We have to deal with, based on Israel is an independent country, other countries, whoever in the Middle East or Asia or anywhere else in the world, they have to look and for their own interest. Israel, definitely we want Israel, is a reality and nobody can deny it. Nobody can say, okay, tomorrow I'm going to eradicate it or make it go away from there. It's not happening. My problem with the whole foreign policy in the United States, I've been in the United States, I'm an American citizen. I want all this. Had we ever thought of becoming, helping those people, those really trying to establish Islamic rule, then we would not have this Al-Qaeda phenomenon in the world.
Abdul Tha, I'm going to leave it there. Thank you very much. So do you think, David, based on his question, that part of U.S. engagement with the Egyptian Muslim Brotherhood needs to be some kind of resetting of U.S. position toward Israel?
I don't think that's going to happen, particularly in an election season here in the U.S. So we can engage with the Muslim Brotherhood, try to help move Egypt's transition to democracy, and still adhere to time-tested U.S. policy, which is support for a two-state solution with Israel and Palestine living side by side and at peace. I'd also like to address, if I may, Brian, the mm-hmm. first part of his statement about Sharia.
Uh-huh.
It's important to know what Al-Banna has stood for. He wrote, "It's the nature of Islam to dominate, not to be dominated, to impose its law on all nations, and to extend its power to the entire planet. He also was the author of the Brotherhood's slogan, God is our objective, the Quran is our constitution, the Prophet is our leader, struggle is our way, and death for the sake of God is our highest aspiration. That's why I say we have to be steely-eyed in dealing with the Brotherhood. But steely-eyed also means recognizing realities that the older Albana followers are now being replaced by a younger generation. The younger generation still adheres to the goal of establishing Sharia law, but the younger generation members are talking about it in a softer and more permissive fashion.
Are they talking about it in terms of what some people call one man, one vote, one time? That is, if they can prevail in an election, that they would run with the agenda of abolishing elections after that and imposing a theocracy.
I don't think that's going to be the case. The support for the Muslim Brotherhood is probably 20 to 25%. Even if they wanted to do that, they don't have popular support for that kind of a radical agenda. They do believe that the Quran as a constitution is stronger than any man-made legal document. So when it comes around to drafting Egypt's future constitution, they're going to try to imbue as many principles from the Quran as possible. What we want to do is to make sure that Egypt's democracy is sustainable, that its future constitution provides power checks and a balance of power so that we don't see the kinds of abuses by the president and the military that we've seen in the past. That's going to support a broader base of secular Egyptians who want to see their country live in peace and prosperity.
David Phillips, director of the Program on Peacebuilding and Rights at Columbia University's Institute for the Study of Human Rights. He is author of the 2008 book, Bullets to Ballots, Violent Muslim Movements in Transition, and a piece in the Egypt Daily News, an op-ed that describes this younger generation of the Muslim Brotherhood and encourages U.S. engagement. By the way, I'm just curious, is that an English-language newspaper in Egypt, or was I reading a translation into English?
I wrote it in English, and it was published in English. I don't know if it appeared on their website in Arabic as well.
Okay. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And coming up next, the new tension between technology in the classroom and saving teachers' jobs. Stay with us.